Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I am Steve Saipa, and I'll be joined later by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson. But we're gonna just jump right into things, because obviously not much Mets baseball is going on, save the Arizona Fall League, which is in its second week now. So, first things first, we will review what went down in Arizona. Mets have sent 8 players: Brett Beatty, Carlos Cortez, Wilmer Reyes, Hayden Sanger, Garrison Bryant, Connor Gray, Colin Holdeman, and Brian Maguire. And we'll just quickly touch on each player and review how they did for the week and for the season so far, which totals 2 weeks. So first up, Brett Beatty. This week, he went 1-for-16 with 4 runs, an RBI, 3 walks, and 10 strikeouts. And for the season to date, that leaves him hitting 267, 421, 433 in 9 games, with 3 doubles, a triple, 3 RBI, 7 walks, 13 strikeouts, and 1 stolen base in as many attempts. Next up is Carlos Cortez. And this week, he went 3-for-12 with 3 runs, 3 RBI, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts, a hit-by-pitch, and an error. So that leaves him on the season hitting 286, 407, 381 in 7 games with a triple, 3 RBI, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, and he did not attempt any stolen bases. Next up is Wilmer Reyes. And this week, he went 6-for-19 with 2 runs, 4 RBI, 5 walks, 4 strikeouts, 3 stolen bases, 1 caught stealing, and 1 error. And for the season, that leaves him hitting 240, 424, 360 in 8 games, with a double, a triple, 4 RBI, 8 walks, 7 strikeouts, and 4 stolen bases in 5 attempts. And among the position players, last but not least, is Hayden Sanger. And this week, he went 2-for-8 with a run, 3 walks, and a strikeout. And that leaves him hitting 231, 412, 308 in 5 games, with a double, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts, and that is about it for him. Now we'll look at the pitchers. First up this week, Garrison Bryant. And he threw 3 innings. He allowed a hit, did not allow any runs. He walked 1, and he struck out 3. So that leaves him so far on the season having started 1 game and appeared in 2, having thrown 5 innings. He's allowed 3 hits. He's given up 1 earned run, which is a 180 ERA. He's walked 2, and he struck out 5. Next up is Connor Gray, and this week Gray pitched 3 innings. He gave 3 hits, he allowed 1 run earned, he gave up 2 walks, and he struck out 3. So on the season so far, he has 2 appearances, and he's thrown 6 innings and allowed 5 hits, giving up 1 run, which is a 150 ERA, with 3 walks and 5 strikeouts. Next up is Colin Holdeman. And Holdeman pitched 1.2 innings this week. He allowed 4 hits. He allowed 4 runs, all of them earned. Gave up 2 walks and struck out 2. So for the season, he's appeared in 3 games in total, all relief appearances. And he's pitched 2.2 innings, having given up 5 hits, 4 runs, which is a 13.50 ERA. He's walked 2 and he struck out 3. And last but not least is Brian Maguire. And Maguire pitched 1.2 innings this week. He allowed 2 hits, and he gave up 4 runs, all earned. He walked 6, and he struck out 2. So on the season so far, Maguire has appeared in 3 games, and he's pitched 2.2 innings, having allowed 4 hits and given up 5 runs, which is a 16.88 ERA. He's walked 7, and he struck out 3. So this week, we are all going to be sharing our thoughts on the 2021 Syracuse Mets. Managed by Chad Kruder, Syracuse went 47-69, which ended up being tied for worst in the AAA East Northeast, along with the Rochester Red Wings, and one of the worst records, period, in not only the AAA East, but the AAA West as well. When I think of the story of the Mets minor league system in the upper levels, AAA and AA, I think the story for 2021 was expectations. We'll focus on Syracuse this week, but going into the season, I think expectations for Syracuse were pretty high. I mean, I know at least I had high hopes for them. Last year during the offseason, the Mets made a lot of moves that addressed team depth, and you know, enough of those guys weren't going to make the major league team after spring training, and they were going to be going to AAA, and they'd be playing for Syracuse. And these guys weren't, you know, all over-the-hill, obviously minor league filler guys like we've seen the Mets go with in the last couple of years. You know, the Danny Espinosas, the Gregor Blancos, the Roger Bernardinas, the Rajai Davises, the Jonathan Albaladejos, the Irvin Santanas, you know, all those AAA greats over the last couple of years. For the most part, the players that were going to be rostered in Syracuse, the guys that the Mets were assembling, were kind of legit guys. Looking at pitching first, they traded for Jordan Yamamoto, they traded for Joey Lucchese, they had David Peterson coming off of a pretty solid rookie season in 2020. You know, given that we thought that the Mets rotation was going to be DeGrom, Syndergaard, Stroman, Carrasco, and Walker for some portion of the season, you know, we all hoped for a majority of the season, basically all three of those guys, Yamamoto, Lucchese, and Peterson, were going to be guys that were getting extensive playing time in Syracuse. And all three of them, relatively young, they showed glimpses of being able to be solid pitchers against MLB hitters. You know, that had the makings of a pretty strong staff. And then, in addition to them, you had Thomas Zupucki, you had Franklin Killame, you had Harold Gonzalez, they would be pitching for Syracuse. Corey Oswalt was going to figure in there somehow. They also signed veteran Jared Eichhoff. So there was, I don't want to say a very good AAA pitching staff, but it looked like it could have been. Maybe the weakest part of the team was going to be the infield, which is more or less projected to be full of guys that were either Mets farmhands that worked their way up to AAA, you know, guys like David Thompson or Cody Bohanek, or minor league free agents that were of dubious pedigree, guys like Wilfredo Tovar, Orlando Calhite, or MMA legend himself, Jake Hager. Basically, the only guys that were kind of notable in the infield were Brandon Drury and Jonathan Villar. And, you know, some combination of those two guys would have been playing for the Mets in some portion of the season. In the outfield, again, they had a pretty solid outfield, at least on paper at the beginning of the year. They acquired Khalil Lee via trade, and he was going to be playing and developing out there in Syracuse. Mason Williams, he was a shrewd minor league pickup. Janushui Fargas, he was a solid farmhand that was already in the system, and he'd be playing in Syracuse. And then, you know, similar to Drury and VR in the infield, they signed Kevin Pillar and Albert Almora, and, you know, some combination of those two guys would be playing in games in Syracuse. But everything started falling apart for the Mets pretty quickly, and when that started happening, they had to start drawing from the depth that they built preseason, and that's basically where everything started going downhill for Syracuse. The Mets' strength was the depth, but that caused massive problems for Syracuse, because all those players that were supposed to be playing for Syracuse suddenly weren't. All of a sudden, instead of having a team that was made out of, you know, solid AAA guys and quad A guys, all of a sudden it was a team made up of spare parts. The guys that weren't signed, you know, back in April because they couldn't really even hack it at the AAA level, let alone make anyone's team in April or May. Obviously, those kinds of guys are not that great. You know, there's exceptions here and there. You know, maybe evaluators in other places miss something. But for the most part, those kinds of guys are guys that are not good. They are the spare parts of the spare parts. They are the last options, last resort. And when you play with a team that's full of last resorts for a considerable portion of the year, well, you don't do good. And, you know, that basically is why the Syracuse Mets did so lousy, despite us going into the season thinking that they would be a fairly solid squad.
Hey guys, Lucas here to go over my part of the recap of the 2021 Syracuse Mets. Much like most of the Mets organization in 2021, there's not a whole lot of good to talk about here. I think Thomas is going to talk about how there was perhaps some positive aspects to the AAA team functioning as a good repository of depth for the Major League side. But you can imagine, when you have a AAA roster that's light on impact prospects, and also being continuously raided by the Major League side for injury replacements, what have you, the AAA results are going to be pretty poor. And that's definitely what we saw with the Syracuse Mets. They were 50-75, playing in the AAA East Northeast Division. Don't ask me what league it used to be. I couldn't tell you. So I don't think it's particularly worthwhile, at least for the content or audience of our podcast, to go in depth on the season itself. But I wanted to highlight a couple guys that I found interesting for one reason or another, amidst a roster that really doesn't have a ton of those names. And you can probably, anyone who's listened to this pod probably knows where I'm going to go first, and that's Khalil Lee. Khalil Lee, of course, one of the acquisitions the Mets made last offseason. He was part of that Steven Matz deal where they took, they got a couple pitchers, Yency Diaz and Josh Winkowski from the Blue Jays, and I believe there was a, oh, and then Sean Rudvoli, of course, for Steven Matz, and then they turned around and used Winkowski along with a player to be named later who turned out to be Freddy Valdez. It was a big hunkin' DSL right field prospect, if you can imagine that in your head, who didn't hit particularly well for the Red Sox. So it doesn't seem like the Mets gave up a ton on that front. But anyway, the Mets got part of what they traded for Khalil Lee in the Steven Matz deal, and then injected themselves into the Andrew Benintendi trade with the Royals in order to pry away Khalil Lee, who had been with the Royals. And Lee's long been someone I've had interest in. Guy with center field defense, he's got defensive skills, he has speed skills, has always shown a decent batting eye, walked a lot in the minors, and by and large, most of those traits appeared, again, in AAA. He walked 18% of the time, by all accounts, played strong defense, though by my own admission, I haven't watched a ton of Syracuse games this year. But, I mean, the physical tools are there, and it seems reasonable. He only swiped 8 bags in 102 games, so definitely less speed than you would hope, particularly after he swiped an insane 53 for the Royals at AA in 2019. So all of those are good signs, and he posted a 162 weighted runs created plus for AAA. This is especially encouraging given some of the rumors we heard about him in the offseason. There were a lot of rumors that came out of the Royals minor league camp in 2020 about certain guys really improving their stock. That was Bobby Witt, MJ Belendez, Nick Prado, and Khalil Lee was another name mentioned there. And the three guys that the Royals hang on to, the ones not who aren't Lee in that previous sentence, by and large showed that those rumors were true. Lee, meanwhile, came into camp with a new swing. There was some great winter video of a very nice looking, I believe it was a home run or just a deep fly ball showing off his new swing. So there was hope, and his offensive output at AAA somewhat backs that up. He even launched 14 homers, which was the most he's hit since A-ball back in 2017. So all of this is definitely encouraging, and this is very much my kind of prospect. I mean, for whatever other concerns we have about Brandon Nimmo, which we don't need to get into, he's one of my favorite players, largely because of his approach. I really am a sucker for these on-base percentage type guys. Khalil Lee, it has not Brandon Nimmo's eye, but that sort of skill set with a lot more athleticism. Of course, I've been dancing around the real elephant in the room. Lee did get a chance to touch the major leagues for, what was it, a week, maybe less, and suffice it to say, it was not great. He ran a strikeout rate of 72.2%. Another way to put that is that in a mere 18 plate appearances, he struck out 13 times, which is just insane. Like, he's not that bad. He doesn't have that level of contact efficiency. But his strikeout rate in AAA was pushing 30%, and it's not as if that was an unstable 30% driven by early year struggles or something. No, he was pretty consistently around a 30% strikeout rate throughout the entire year. And as much as I love this profile, as much as I'm going to probably push him when the off-season list comes, season comes around, that is a huge problem, right? It pushes him from someone who has a really, really intriguing skill set if they could just figure a couple things out to quite possibly not a viable major leaguer, right? And the big prospect websites will talk about the most important tool being the hit tool. And that's simply true, right? Like, if you can't hit, you're not going to be able to play in modern baseball, right? You're not going to be able to get to your power, no matter how natural it is. You're not going to be able to use your speed on the base paths because you can't reach base. And this is the big concern with these walk-heavy minor league guys. If you can't hit, major league pitchers will challenge you and those walks will dry up. So I think there's a real question as to whether Lee is actually a viable major leaguer. And I have a lot of concerns there, despite how much I'm going to overrate him this offseason. Now, it's possible that he can figure a couple things out, and he's slotting more into that Keon Broxton type role of high strikeout, big power, high athleticism, center field defender. And that's a really nice fourth outfielder. That's a good player to have around. There's also a chance he improves even more than that. Like, Brandon Nimmo never struck out this much in the minor leagues, to be clear, but has trimmed his strikeout rate considerably over the past two seasons. He's cut it from the mid to high 20s to below 20% over 2020 and 2021. So I'm not writing off Lee's bat here entirely, but I'm definitely concerned. And this is one of those instances where it'd be really great to have minor league pitch-specific swinging strike data to better understand what Lee's struggling with, right? Is it just that he can't hit a breaking ball at all? Is it that he can't catch up with velocity? Is it both? Is it something else? That sort of granular data would give us better feel, I think, for how likely he is to figure this out. But right now, as tantalizing as the final product is here, I have some concerns. Still going to be a top 10 prospect in the system, if for no other reason than the system sucks. And it's an intriguing skill set that we can get excited about, and even if nothing else, it should be a decent bench outfielder. Now, this is not someone you should be penciling in for a starting role, so if that shows up in your AAOP, prepare to be dinged accordingly. So that's enough with me ranting about Khalil Lee, who I'm a big fan of. Let me move on to someone else that I was really intrigued by when the Mets picked him up, and that's Travis Blankenhorn. Now, Blankenhorn was a prospect of note as recently as 2019. He was appearing on organizational lists for the Twins. BP might have even had them in their top 10 in 2019. You know, if I was a better podcaster, I would have looked this up beforehand. Corner infielder type, though he plays second base, that sort of non-shortstop utility infielder who should, in theory, be able to hit left-handed bat. Bulkier dude is maybe the nice way to put it, but has some good bat-to-ball skills, has a decent eye at the plate, and should have some pop given his skills, though it's never been a particularly prodigious power in the minors. Now, despite this, he was just getting passed around like a hot potato this offseason. The Twins waived him, he went to the Dodgers, he went to the Mariners, and finally he landed with the Mets. And had a really nice season in AAA. He hit 255, 373, 484, 9 homers in just under 200 plate appearances. That's a 130 weighted. And he also got some major league time. He hit his first major league home run, which, I mean, I'm always very appreciative of the guys who get up and get their one shot, get at least a taste, get their moment. But I really do think there's more here. Despite, I'm a little puzzled by why he got passed around so much this offseason, given that he's only 25 and still has options left. He seems like someone that a team that basically any major league team should be able to, should be interested in holding on to. Maybe the Dodgers have a roster crunch, right? I can understand that. But why the Twins or the Mariners are passing up a chance to hang on to this guy and see if he improves his power by half a grade or improves his hit tool for half a grade, right? That's a difference between an up and down bench bat and maybe a second division starter at second base or something like that. And developing those guys internally is definitely valuable. I mean, just look at the Mets AAA roster. I don't know that there's any infielder on this roster that is more interesting as a prospect than Blankenhorn, and discounting Mark Vientos getting however many at-bats he got at the end of the season. So I still think that Blankenhorn is a real prospect. He's 25. He was born in 96, right? So he'll turn 26 during next season. Again, not someone that we want to pencil in for a major league role necessarily. I'm not sure I'd even pencil him in for a spot on the bench, but as an optionable post-hype prospect with some upside, this is exactly the kind of piece you want to have kicking around at AAA. And I like his swing and his the profile of his minor league performance, let's put it that way, enough to think that there's something more here, even not enough to like stop me from signing Javier Baez or Chris Bryant or anything like that, but enough that I'm intrigued by him and would be somewhat annoyed if he's again passed around by a hot potato or passed around like a hot potato by the Mets, given their lack of upper minors depth. Now, last little bit here, and this one is more a novelty, certainly not someone I expect to contribute in the major leagues in any way, but someone I had been hoping would get a major league shot, and that's Drew Jackson. So Jackson was a Rule 5 pick several years ago as part of the Major League Rule 5 draft, but then got picked by the Mets as part of the Minor League Rule 5 draft last year. So this is like the real dregs. If you're interested in this stuff, you should really follow Ben Badler from Baseball America. He does a lot of great work. He gets into this very intently and understands. I don't understand the rules well enough to explain them in depth here, but there's a minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft where it's mostly just org depth guys being passed around, if we're being totally honest, and Jackson isn't a prospect, if we're being honest. Like, he was drafted in 2015 as a college player in the fifth round. He's now 28. He's been passed around from the Mariners to the Dodgers, Baltimore. All that said, he had a pretty nice season for the AAA Syracuse Mets. 309 plate appearances, hit 251, 397, 424. That's a 127 weighted, 9 homers and 24 steals. And he did this while playing all 3 outfield positions, as well as shortstop, third base, second base, even appeared at first base, and pitched in a couple blowouts because the AAA Syracuse Mets pitching staff was horrible. Now, Jackson has gotten his quote-unquote major league shot. He got a little bit of time with Baltimore, and by a little bit of time, I mean 4 plate appearances across 3 games in 2019. But he didn't get a hit, and given that he was performing in AAA and the multiple opportunities the Mets had to get him up onto their 40-man roster as the season was slipping away. I was a little disappointed not to see him. It's definitely a feel-good story, someone who has utility as upper minors depth, particularly, again, given the state of the Mets system, and someone who had been doing the yeoman's work of bouncing around to every position on the diamond to accommodate a roster that was continually in flux. And I think it's a good organizational practice to give someone like that a chance at the majors, a chance in the majors, if you're in a lost season and there's no one better to play, right? Like, I don't think there's anything to be lost once the Mets are out of the playoff race, which they were pretty clearly for a while. There's no real reason to, say, rush J.D. Davis back while his wrist is still bothering him, instead of giving Drew Jackson 15 at-bats or something to get his first major league hit. Right, I think that's something that good, empathetic organization should do, and I would also suspect it's something that players would make note of. Right, like an organization's going to treat me well and give me a chance. So definitely not someone who we're interested in as a major prospect. Probably a decent chance he's not even in the organization next year. But he had a nice season at AAA, and I hope that gets acknowledged. I hope he gets another chance, gets another job. And I do also sincerely hope he gets to come back to the majors at some point and have another chance at his first major league hit, or in his only major league hit, even. So those are the players I wanted to highlight from the Syracuse Mets. Certainly not a deep, in-depth review of their team, but truthfully, it's not a roster that deserves that. So hopefully next year will be more rewarding. I'll pass it on to whoever's going next in our compilation episode this week. But until I talk to you again, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
In discussing the Syracuse Mets this year, I think even going into the season, it was hard to consider them anything but like a filler league, almost a filler division for the Mets, just because every single exciting prospect they have, even the Beatties of the world and the guys who were really, we talk about every week on this podcast and every Mets fan is excited about, they weren't even close to sniffing AAA this year. And that's not their fault, but also it's not AAA's fault. It's not Syracuse's fault that they were just designed that way, but also that's just how it's happened because of trades in the organization and stuff like that. Like, if the Kalenic trade never happened, he would have been there or it in the big leagues either way. But, yeah, Syracuse just didn't have the prospect talent. And while it was a failure for that, I don't want to call it a failure because my overall take is that it helped the big league Mets more than you would expect. But they didn't win a lot of games in Syracuse, and they didn't really... It was kind of like a lost year for the actual Syracuse Mets as a quote-unquote team, like if you're going to talk about it that way. But the thing that interests me the most is that I found that the Syracuse Mets were a very adequate and very helpful almost taxi squad for the big league club because of how many injuries they had. We were talking about the replace Mets on Twitter and everything like that, and guys like Mason Williams and Janeshwi Fargas and every single person who played in that month, the Brandon Drurys of the world, all those guys. While that's not an exciting thing for a Mets minor league podcast to discuss, because, like, what are we really going to talk about with Mason Williams and Brandon Drury? And, I mean, even Tylor Megill started there, but that's a different story because he's an actual, like, young player. But outside of Megill, it was all veterans, really. And their entire goal was when people get hurt. The entire reason for them being in the organization and why AAA was a success for me this year, not so much on the field for the Syracuse Mets. They were a huge success for the big league Mets because the Syracuse Mets basically kept the Mets alive in the middle of the season when every single person was hurt. They were running out lineups where it was like Francisco Lindor, who was in the midst of the biggest slump of his career, and like eight other players who would have been in AAA, and they somehow kept the Mets afloat. So like this year in terms of prospect development for the Syracuse Mets is pretty lost. Like there were some minor leaguers who there were some relievers, I mean, who like the Orzies of the world and guys like that, who we will discuss next year and will have a place on the Mets. And Tylor Megill was an excellent, excellent piece for the Mets for a while, and he came straight from Syracuse, but he was kind of someone that not many people talked about. He popped to the surprise of many. But yeah, I just find it really interesting how the more I leave the season and how disappointing it was win-loss record-wise, just because there's a lot of filler in the organization. Like, I think the Syracuse Mets would have had a much better record if the big Mets didn't all get hurt at the same time and they were really allowed to, like, figure it out, and they were allowed to play with each other, and they were allowed to actually be a quad A team, which is pretty much what they were this year. Like, I think they would have had a better on-the-field record with all those veterans there, but they were constantly getting called up, and they were constantly, I mean, helping the big league club, which when you have such a thin upper level of the farm system, like, outside of only a few teams, it's probably like this, but these are the guys who fill your AAA roster. And outside of clearly was another prospect, obviously, who logged major league time with the Mets, but he just wasn't ready offensively for that burden. He just wasn't ready. Like, I'm glad the Mets tried him, and obviously, like, it's not like they had a lot of other options, but I'm still glad the Mets gave him a shot. He deserved a shot, but also he very clearly was not ready for the major leagues. And then he went down to Syracuse after that and was excellent and walked all the time and hit a bunch of home runs and played good defense. And, like, if we get out of the season with Khalil Lee and Tylor Megill and a bunch of guys who actually helped the big league Mets win, the Travis Blankenhorns of the world and everyone else, like, that's important, even though it's not exactly exciting and it's not exactly something we're going to talk about in 5 to 10 years. Hell, we're probably not even going to talk about this next year. But I don't think it was like an abject failure of an organizational level, like maybe AA was, where they were just really, really bad and that's all prospects. Or like the only good team was St. Lucie. Like, Brooklyn couldn't really pitch. Binghamton was just bad. But Syracuse was bad because it was a bunch of veterans who were just waiting for the call up. But also, their starting lineup spent an entire month in Queens helping the Mets somehow maintain first place for a long stretch of time before everyone else came back. So, like, Syracuse was a really weird season for me. Like, outside of the rest of them, you could very clearly say, hey, the record was bad and therefore it was bad because that's how it was. But I think you kind of have to put an asterisk next to the Syracuse season just because I think it would have been a whole lot different if they weren't constantly getting jerked around by the Mets schedule. And it's not their fault, like, the Mets had to call those players up. But yeah, Syracuse was funny this year, honestly. It was just, oh, which S-Met is going to come up and hit a home run against the Pirates? And that's what ended up happening sometimes. And the replace Mets were really fun. And even though it didn't become results in Syracuse, it still became results for the Mets. And therefore, shout out the 2021 Syracuse Mets.
Hello, everyone. This is Ken with from Complex to Queens, and I'm going to talk about the 2021 Syracuse Mets for a minute or two. The Syracuse Mets were not a particularly good team from a wins and losses standpoint. They went 50-75 and fell out of the race in the AAA East Northeast Division fairly early. However, they did kind of do the job that AAA is meant to do, which is give a place for players to stay sharp between being needed on the big league team's active roster. So the Mets this year obviously went through a lot of players, and some guys from the AAA team came up and contributed, maybe not for a particularly long amount of time, but contributed in some meaningful way. One example is Brandon Drury, who actually had a pretty good run with the Mets in a small sample size of mostly pinch hitting. He went 274, 307, 476 for the Mets in 88 plate appearances. He got a couple big hits down the stretch. And he spent most of the year at AAA Syracuse. So Another Khalil Lee offensively did not look ready for the big leagues, but had a few moments in which he made excellent defensive plays. Patrick Mazeika, the RBI king, obviously had a few big moments and managed to hit a couple homers. So the Mets, you know, while they weren't necessarily the most exciting guys, they did manage to get usable depth from their AAA roster. Clearly the best hitter on the team, ironically, given his small stint in the majors, was Khalil Lee. Khalil Lee hit an absurd 162 WRC plus, 274, 451, 500 in 388 plate appearances, and while he struck out 29.6% of the time, he managed to walk in 18.3% of his plate appearances. So while his small big league stint early in the year didn't go particularly well with the bat, he really performed excellently the entire season at AAA, to the point where maybe he might be in the mix for a slightly bigger role next season, if you know, the Mets find themselves in need of an outfielder, particularly an outfielder who can play center and play center well. Maybe the most interesting pitcher who spent a large portion of the season at AAA, in my mind, is Adam Oller. He, you know, didn't pitch particularly long, mostly just the month of September, but he was very, very effective. He threw 44 innings of a 2.45 ERA, managed to strike out almost a batter an inning, and kept his walks south of four batters per nine. And yeah, he kind of put himself on the map between his time in Binghamton and Syracuse. So Adam Oller is kind of somebody to follow now, based on his time with the 2021 Syracuse Mets. One final person I'd like to talk about is Mark Vientos, who spent only a small amount of time, a short time with Syracuse, but was kind of impressive in 43 plate appearances. So it's obviously a small sample, but it's always really nice to see a player come up and you know, not really struggle upon being at a new level. Now, there's all sorts of reasons to hand wave it away. AAA, the level of competition is down compared to previous years. You know, it's late in the season, a lot of the pitchers are gassed, but no matter which way you slice it, he came up and he really didn't miss a beat. His batting line at AA Binghamton was 281, 346, 580 in 306 plate appearances. He struck out 28.4% of the time, walked 8.5% of the time, 144 WRC plus. You know, that's a great season in AA. And then he got promoted and remarkably improved. Really didn't skip a beat. In 43 plate appearances, very, very small sample, obviously doesn't mean much other than being nice that he kept up his pace at a higher level of competition, but in 43 plate appearances, he managed to hit 278, 395, 583, with 30.2% strikeout rate and a 16.3% walk rate, and managed to hit three homers in those 43 plate appearances. So if I had to say the best new player at Syracuse, that'd probably be Vientos. He was very impressive in that small amount of time, and adjusted very quickly. So he's likely destined to head back there next season to start. So yeah, I'll be interested to see how he fares in a bigger sample, you know, in AAA. So really not much else to talk about with Syracuse, kind of a boring team. But there were some bright spots. They did kind of do the job of supplying the big league team with bodies when they need it. And there were a few players who really stood out.
Well, that's it for the show this week. I hope you enjoyed it. And if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at elvlahos343. Ken is at ken1191. And Thomas is at sedmethseason, S-Z-N. Subscribe to the podcast or if you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. So until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.